Good afternoon and welcome to the EcoNews Report, a production of the North Coast Environmental Center in conjunction with KHSU, located on the campus of Humboldt State University. I am Raina Nanayel, your host for the EcoNews Report. I am Executive Director of the North Coast Environmental Center. And our guest today is Heather Young. She's co-leader of the Northern Humboldt Label GMOs Initiative, and we are so happy to have her. She'll be speaking to us today about issues related to genetically modified organism. Heather, thank you so much for being with us today on this very important topic and a very timely one as well. I'd like to start by asking you to talk to me about the movement to label GMOs. When did it start and how did you become involved? What's been the history there?
Yeah, well, I want to thank you first for having me here and allowing me to bring this subject to a larger audience. Oh, genetically modified foods is been a controversial issue ever since it was first introduced in the mid-90s to the general public in their food. What we're doing was started by Pam Larry in January of this year. One morning, she just woke up and decided that she had had enough and that we have a right to know what we're eating and what's in our food supply. And so she started the initiative to get all genetically modified foods labeled in California. So what we're trying to do is to get an initiative put on the ballot for the November 2012 vote. Right now, we have applied to the state, and what they're doing is reviewing our application, and we expect it to be approved and then put back to us sometime in November, maybe December. At that time, we have 120 days to get roughly 540,000 signatures. So our goal is actually around 800,000 so that we can cover the signatures that the state kicks back to us. We want to make sure that it gets on the ballot. And at that point, it would get on the ballot for the November 2012 vote, and it would be up for a popular vote for the citizens of California.
So as I understand it, and just for the benefit of folks out there, between 1997 and 1999, genetically modified ingredients started just appearing in two-thirds of all U.S. processed food. And
correct.
There was no real oversight in this process, no scientific review for the effects on the human body, human physiology, or environmental issues.
That's right. There's a term called substantial equivalence, and what it is a concept developed by the OECD. That's the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And it maintains that a novel food, like a genetically modified food, and so that would be something different than a normal food made in nature, it should be considered the same as or as safe as a conventional food if it demonstrates the same characteristics and composition as the conventional food. So if it looks and smells and tastes the same, it should be called the same. And the reason that's important is because for regulations, that if it looks and tastes and smells the same, it should be called the same. It would be under the same regulations as normal food, even though there was no real testing done to find out whether it was safe or not.
It looks like a tomato. It doesn't smell like a tomato anymore, but it still is a tomato.
That's what they're saying, yes.
So just to play devil's advocate for a moment, genetically modified foods have This is what any seed company will tell you in the California market. People have been genetically modifying food since the beginning of agriculture. You know, we've been selecting for various strains, and essentially that's what GMO is doing. It's just selecting for resilience to insect pests, larger fruits, better color, this kind of thing. What is problematic about re-engineering nature, natural seed diversity, to select for a kind of bionic or hypercrop, in your opinion?
Well, I have to emphasize first that this isn't like natural selection. It's not like breeding a tastier tomato by selecting the right tomato plants and just making sure that those get bred. This is scientifically altering the genetic, the DNA structure of the plant to make it resistant to pesticides or herbicides, so that the companies that are doing it are selling both herbicides, pesticides, seed stock, everything. And that way they can make more money.
Again, and that is an interesting point, but you've heard this argument, no doubt, that,
right,
you know, GMO is just another form of really breeding and selection from a farmer's perspective.
Right.
Something very important to note is that farmers aren't necessarily included in this process. We're talking about corporations who are trying to essentially copyright seed or copyright, you know,
correct,
their strain. So it's sold as a kind of, you know, this is what the farmers are doing, but really what we have here is, you know, a corporate move.
Oh, yes. Well, that's a big part of it, is that the seeds grow a plant and the plant is called edible, but the seeds that may be in that plant don't reproduce. And so once the farmer starts using these modified seeds, he's beholden to the corporation to continue buying seeds from them. So their plan is to dominate the food market, the world food market. They're doing it everywhere all over the world with the staple crops of each area. So for us, soy and corn are the two biggest ones. They're working on rice and wheat, and there's several other vegetables that they have modified, put on the market, have removed from the market. They're working on it.
I understand that in the U.S., as of 2006, 89% of the planted area of soybeans was GMO, 83% of cotton, and 61% of corn or maize varieties were genetically modified. And I'm sure the figures have risen dramatically since 2006.
Well, I personally don't consider corn as not modified now. There's no such thing as non-modified corn, even though you can say only 80% was modified that was planted because of cross-pollinization and the wind and the birds and the bees and the way it's supposed to work here. So once the modified crop is introduced to our environment in the first place, it alters possibly all other crops.
And that is the huge threat. And let's talk for a minute about informed choice. This is a cornerstone of your initiative. It really resonates strongly right now with the Occupy movement in general, not just Occupy Wall Street, but Occupy San Francisco, all the solidarity Occupy movements. Why is informed choice so powerful, so important, especially now when it is virtually the only tool that civilians in our society have to combat the greed and profiteering aimed at debilitating our public trust and creating what can only be really seen as a slave class?
Yeah. Oh, well, okay. So informed choice is important because people can vote with their dollars. This plan of global seed domination won't actually come to fruition unless we buy the stock, we buy their vegetables and give them money. If you're informed about what's going on and what's in the foods, you have the option to make a decision to either back those companies with your dollars or not.
And this, in my opinion, is the great new frontier of revolution, because at this point, there really is only one way for most people to act, to fight the power, is through this sense of, I have to vote with my dollar. And what this means for most Americans, for most citizens of the world, is really making tremendous sacrifices, not going to the easiest source for food, not shopping at convenience stores, not participating in a society that's been constructed without their approval, without their best interests in heart. But from the perspective of the poor, what's really interesting is that this is a sacrifice, a personal devotion they're having to take on above and beyond the 8 to 12 hour work days that they're being forced into because of the economic situation and the way our society is structured. So I think that this is the most exciting and powerful way that citizens can really act, which is why I think the label GMO movement is so much more than just about GMOs. This, is, to me, is one of the most exciting subjects. It definitely relates to ecology. We will talk about effects on the ecosystem of genetically modified organisms.
Oh, yeah.
So let's move into that. But maybe we should first talk about health issues, because I know that for a lot of people, that's going to be a motivator.
Right.
What is contemporary science telling us about the potential risk to the body?
Well, there's been several studies done on small lab animals, hamsters, mice, rats. And we've seen everything from just a general decomposition in health to reproductive problems several generations later, and things even as extreme as hair growing out of the mouths of hamsters that were fed only GM foods. So there's a lot of controversy even about the safety and whether it's healthy or not of these foods, because we go back to substantial equivalence. It's being called the same. And so they're saying it's just as healthy.
So you're going back to substantial equivalence. They're calling it the same, but they don't have the research to support that it's the same, because they can't base it on
right
any sense of fact. So essentially what you're saying is, you know, substantial equivalence be like saying, well, that deforested mound over there still looks like a hill, so it must still be a hill.
Right.
You know, we're not going to do any science to look at what's happening with regard to the soil or what's happening with the hydrology on that hill. We're just going to call it a hill. Because it's obviously a hill. The trees are gone. The water is sheeting off and bringing the soil with it. But we wouldn't know that because we haven't done the studies to find that out.
Right.
So that that is really alarming.
But there's another issue.
Sure.
Which is allergens. The amount of people having allergens to corn or soy products since the 1990s, when the modified crops have been introduced to our food system, has skyrocketed. It's an amazingly big thing. I think one of the biggest places you can see it is in baby formula, is that a lot of children are developing things like eczema, and it directly relates to the soy. And we don't have any proof that it's because the soy is modified. But before the modification, this wasn't an issue.
But for some people, these are really debilitating. And it really does suggest something else. It suggests that there was something in the natural evolution of the foods that we were eating, i.e. honeybees, why they prescribe locally pollinized honeybee honey for allergy.
Right.
So there's something in that evolutionary process where the food and the pollen and the soil and the water that exists where you are helps to give you kind of a protection from
yes.
these kinds of allergies. So that is a huge issue for a lot of people. Then we have the cultural level. So we have, on the one hand, a lot of science that hasn't been done about the effects to health.
Right.
And then we're talking largely about agriculture, so plants, but that doesn't even take into account GMOs for animals, you know, and
right.
that whole debacle.
That's a whole other issue actually we're not really tackling right now. We're just trying to emphasize labeling GMOs and baby steps.
Exactly.
We'll start here.
So then there's the allergens, and then there's the cultural issues. What has this done in terms of cultural issues for family farmers, for indigenous people growing crops around the world? Can you talk about that a little bit?
I know that they're pushing the crops all over the world. I know that there's certain communities that are rejecting them because they've heard about what's happening. It was a wonderful thing that in Haiti, after the earthquakes, Monsanto offered them thousands and thousands and thousands of seeds, and they accepted them and burnt them in protest. So there are some small farmers who are aware of what it's doing to their crops, but it's going to bind them to the corporations that are producing these seed stock. It goes back to world domination.
It's breeding a cultural dependence on a kind of mono corporation.
Right.
And culturally, that has a huge effect because these traditions of saving seed and sharing seed, it hits right at the core of a community's ability to share with one another.
True.
So to take something as essential as water and food and cutting into their ability to share it among their community, instead forcing them to become at odds with one another to kind of keep up economically.
Well, you can kind of see it already happened here in America. Gosh, how many kids think that hamburger just comes from the grocery store in plastic and they don't know where milk comes from, or eggs, or even how turnips are grown, or any of that. A lot of this hits home to me. I remember as a little kid, I always thought that they wouldn't allow any food or anything to be released that wasn't safe. They just won't let that happen to us. And now as an adult boy, the rose glasses have just come off because I can't believe how scary the idea is that within a generation, people could even forget how to save those seeds.
Or not be able to, because like you pointed out, they're not viable.
Right.
You can put them in the ground once. When you go to yield them and collect the seed, that seed is not viable.
Right.
And that has been genetically modified. That has been selected for profit. So I think that is perhaps the most invasive and offensive aspect of the GMO. Pro-GMO movement is just the blatant profiteering. And in light of the hunger that we have in the world.
Well, they say this is going to cure that hunger.
And that is an interesting issue. You want to talk about that?
Well, the idea would be that their super crop is just so awesomely wonderful and resistant to any kind of pests or anything like that, that when everything else has died off, theirs are the seeds that are going to be around for us to eat. So they're going to save the world, and all of these, you know, dying babies in Africa are going to get food. But the reality is that these crops are actually failing at the same rate or higher rates than traditional crops. And it's a falsity. It's a propaganda that they're going to save the world with their GM crop. It's something that they're still really saturating the media and the public with, is that life is going to be okay with the overpopulation and all the people here and the lack of food we have. They're going to save us with their super seeds.
And I do understand that Monsanto and other organizations often go into villages and countrysides hand in hand with some
local religious converting folks, and they often show up right next to them. You know, here's your new religion and here's your new seed.
Right.
Which is, for people who are struggling, offering them that
food
that seems like a good deal. They might not know about it. That is really, that takes conversion and colonization to a new level.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about, so we would call that maybe the great lie, that GMOs are going to end hunger and feed the world.
Oh, yes.
And that's part of what your initiative is trying to address. I'm speaking with Heather Young, co-leader of Northern Humboldt Label GMOs Initiative. Some people have asked, why not legislation? Why initiatives? So just in terms of how you all structured this, let's give a sense of why you decided to move forward with an initiative.
Well, this is a grassroots effort. I'm a mom of three kids leading a normal life, and I got an email one day saying they needed somebody here in the Eureka Arcata area to help with this movement. And I think that we have a right to know what's in our food. Once you can choose to continue eating it if you want to. You'd be amazed at how many people I come across in daily life who just have never even heard of modified foods, let alone the dangers that might or might not be associated with them. I go back to, it's a grassroots effort. We've got over 65 leaders throughout California who are all just normal people like myself. And we're out spending our time trying to get the signatures. We think if the people have a vote, as opposed to the legislature, that's possibly paid off. I'm not going to say any names or accuse anybody of anything. But we all know that major corporations spend a lot of money to lobby within the legislature. And so if we just left it up to our elected officials, it's likely that they would just, you know, find a way to shoot it down again. If we bring it to the people and try to inform the people about what's really going on, then I'm really confident that this is going to pass in November. We're just going to have to go up against the untruths that the major corporations are going to pay to unleash once they start battling us over this.
And so this is a way for you to send a very strong, direct message to your governors, mm-hmm. to people in the state, to our political leaders. It's also a way for people to get some ownership, for the community and the civic-minded folks to get involved, or mm-hmm. just everyday people to get involved and do something about this. What has your turnout been, your response to the movement? Have you been really pleased with that?
I have. Even people who don't think that modified foods are bad, once they understand that my goal is just to inform, just to have it labeled, I just want to know what's in there. You should know what's in there. Then even I get those people who are on my side, who are for labeling. Ultimately, if it's the wonderful crop that they say it is, they shouldn't have an issue with labeling it. So.
And I understand, and this is very interesting to me, that federal labeling legislation has been before Congress since 1999.
Yeah.
That GMO labeling legislation has been tried a number of times in California, our great progressive state mm-hmm. of California, but has never made it out of committee. This is really shocking because, again, we're not saying remove all genetically modified organisms. What we are saying is you have a right, we have a right to know, and you have a responsibility to inform us. And so this is just shocking. And this is what this movement grew out of.
Yes, but I have to go back to it. To me, it's not so shocking. Again, the major corporations have a lot of money to put into lobbying. And I don't find it so shocking that... Let's not act like they're paid off. Maybe they just believe the corporations more than they believe anyone else. And so it's not so shocking that it got shot down by the legislature in the past. That's a part of the reason why we're making it a ballot initiative. There's such power in the people's right to vote.
There really is. And I am really happy about the work that you're doing. Can I state that again? Can we talk a little bit about alfalfa and go back to this discussion of corn and talk about why there is so much momentum and what the great fear is right now with alfalfa being on the table for GMO?
Well, we feed alfalfa to our cattle. And boy, okay, so here's how it correlates to me in a really layman's way. If GM crops are giving hamsters hairy mouths and killing rats, what's it going to do to me after I eat the meat that's been living on this crop its whole life? Because it's going to be cheaper and easier to grow for them, or so they think. And so I can't imagine a farmer who's feeding his, or a rancher who's feeding his cattle GM alfalfa, feeding it anything else. That would be all it gets. So the meat from that would be deteriorated, or at least that's what I would believe. You know, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know for sure.
But the cross-pollination is also a huge issue with the alfalfa. So,
and other grasses.
Exactly.
Yes.
So we're just to hit on the environmental concerns a bit. You know, if you've read Seeds of Deception, or if you haven't, it's a great book to maybe look into. But, you know, we're talking about potentially losing the diversity and purity of strain of a lot of different plants. It has certainly happened a long time ago, just with plant breeding in Mexico and Chiapas, and indigenous people there are having tremendous problems with maintaining the purity of their corns, the strains that they've been breeding for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And I guess the fear is with alfalfa that we're going to run into a similar kind of situation because of the cross-pollination in a major way. And if you also look at the sheer amount of alfalfa we grow, you can just speed that process up by, you know, quite a lot. So I guess that is really at the issue here. This is why the GMO initiative is so important right now, because we are faced against people trying to get their hands on alfalfa right as we speak.
Right.
And so
not just alfalfa, but wheat too. It's another grain that would cross-pollinize and spread. And I'm not horribly educated on it, but I understand that there's GM trees as well. So forests. Imagine like all the plants on the earth, whether it's edible or not, only living one cycle. And a company being able to decide when and where a plant grows. Boy, like really put that into your head. A company being able to decide when and where grass grows.
And I do understand that. I know that there's a lot of attention given to genetically modified seed that is agricultural seed for vegetable crops, and that a lot of attention is also given in the seed movement to what percentage of seed has already been kind of co-opted by major corporations and is now not viable seed.
Right.
And of course, there's the Women's Parliament relatively recently, Women's Parliament in India that's moving very strongly against this, that has a very strong voice, the first ever all-female Women's Parliament. So those are some very exciting things. But the other thing that people don't realize is 65 to 75% of the native plants, so non-vegetable, non-consumptive plants, are also owned predominantly by major corporations at this point.
Right.
And that is hugely, that's what you're talking about.
Right.
And this is hugely concerning. And so that trajectory towards genetic modification of even native plants and plants, and that is
everything growing.
That is an ecological concern. That
yes.
You can't get more ecological than that, as if food wasn't, but
it's not, it's not just food. It's our air. Plants clean the soil and the water. I mean, there's just so many things that your imagination could just go and go and go with it. And unfortunately, I think their imagination has.
And it's just economically, too, the effect on the everyday person. And this is where I meant culturally. This has a huge effect culturally on people when they're no longer able to carry out their traditions of, you know, saving seed or the rituals associated with that. When they are forced to not farm because they can't afford the seed and therefore have to go into urban centers to do other work and that kind of thing. I wanted to give a brief list of some of the things that we have that are frequently genetically modified, which would be rapeseed, honey, cotton, rice, soybeans, sugarcane, tomatoes, corn, all manner of corn, canola, potatoes, flax, papaya, squash, red-hearted chicory, cottonseed oil, tobacco, meat, peas, vegetable oil, sugar beets, dairy products, and vitamins.
I do have to say that some of those have been modified, introduced to the market, and removed.
Good.
I understand. I have avoided russet potatoes like the plague since I found out that they had been modified. But I recently found out that there was a big backlash from McDonald's. Their customers didn't like the idea of modified French fries. And so McDonald's canceled their modified potato order. And so now russet potatoes are back to the regular ones, as far as we know. But again, cross-pollination and all of that, I'm sure it's not the same. But those supposedly are safe once again.
Excellent. And so let's remind people, this is an initiative for everyone to get involved with. This is a grassroots movement. Yes. You absolutely need the support and activation of the public for this initiative. You need people to write. You need them to sign off on this. You need them to be very clear and neat in their signatures, their addresses to be accurate, and you need to collect 800,000 signatures in how many days?
Well, we'll have 120, so roughly 5 months.
So, and that is still a huge task for a grassroots
yes.
movement. And so you're going to need the cooperation of the people. And again, this is an initiative to inform people
right.
about GMO, not to necessarily remove it. So
right.
you're trying to make it so that the federal and the state, well, hopefully the federal eventually, but the state of California will have to inform people about the presence of genetically modified organisms in their food.
Yes, that's exactly it. And there's stuff that you can do now to get involved. Even though we're not collecting signatures at this point, we are collecting pledges of people of 100, 250, 500 signatures. Yes, I'll go get 100 signatures when the time comes to get the signatures. Right. You can go on labelgmo.org and fill out a pledge for that. We are also looking for activists. We need people to do things for us, like call the media outlets and let them know when we're having movie nights or meetings. We need people to flyer. We need people to sit at, we've been approved to sit at several different grocery stores and give out information. Because again, a lot of people don't even know what a modified food is. And so someone who would be willing to just spend a couple hours sitting at a booth, letting their neighbors know that what they're eating, or at least, you know, that it's what's going on.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of different things that you can do to get involved now, even before the time comes to fill out the signature and make sure your address is printed neatly and correctly.
And that's wonderful. And then again, I am speaking with Heather Young, co-leader of Northern Humboldt Label GMO's initiative, and you can contact them or learn more about their organization on http://labelgmos.org. That's labelgmos.org, labelgmos.org. So is there some other way that people can contact?
Yes. Also, we have a email, and it's northernhumboldtlabelgmos@hotmail.com. We have a Facebook page for all of those socially connected on the internet people. And again, that's Northern Humboldt Label GMOs. I tried to make everything as easy as possible. We are going to be showing The Future of Food at the Arcata Theater Lounge.
Wonderful.
On November 12th. We're also going to be giving out information at the Hemp Fest down in Garberville. I think that is the night of the 12th as well. And I just found out that we're going to be running the kitchen at the Harvest Ball.
Excellent.
So those are different ways where you can connect with us personally, as well as we have meetings every Sunday at 4 o'clock at Sun Yi's Academy of Taekwondo on Giantoli Lane.
Excellent. Can you say that again for us?
Yes. Every Sunday at 4 o'clock at Sun Yi's Academy of Taekwondo on Giantoli Lane.
Excellent. And that's a weekly meeting.
Yes. Every Sunday.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for doing this, for your activism, for getting this grassroots movement up and going. And this is super exciting. I was very pleased to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for giving me your time.
You've been listening to the Eco News Report, a production of the North Coast Environmental Center in conjunction with KHSU, located on the campus of Humboldt State University. My name is Raina Nonail. I've been your host for the past half hour. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archive programs at khsu.org. The Eco News Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Thank you to our engineer, Fred McLaughlin. Please join us again next Thursday at 1:30 p.m. here on KHSU for the Eco News Report.